Good morning to everyone. So good to be with you. So thankful to be among the saints this morning. And appreciate once again the opportunity to bring a lesson that will help us to understand what God's perspective is from his vantage point. And I am actually starting a new series of lessons here this morning that will probably go three or four lessons. I don't know exactly when that will be, but this will be the first of them. So don't expect this lesson to be sort of self-contained and complete, because this is just the first of a number of in this series. And I'll sort of ease you into the subject matter this morning. Incidentally, I wanted to say this before I get started. I'm always so thankful and appreciative about how thoughtful our services and teaching and the men who continually bring forth excellent lessons. Brian did such a good job. And I know, as well as the other men that present PowerPoints and, you know, develop these thoughts, it takes a lot of time to do that. And I'm really thankful that for the great teaching that we have. But if you're not one here that does teaching and preaching and some public service, I'm just as thankful for you and your presence here among us. Having said that, here's a few words or phrases, several words together that will get us thinking about something that I want to talk about in the coming few lessons that I present. One of the terms would be individual autonomy, is one of the phrases that comes up. Personal agency, or sometimes it might be called conscious agency. Another word would be self-controlled destiny, otherwise known as two words, and some of you might have guessed these two words, and that is free will. Free will. That's what I'm going to be talking about over beginning this morning and the next number of lessons. And you may think, well, okay, I know what Les is going to say about this because I've heard about, you know, heard lessons on free will before, and he's going to, you know, talk about Calvinism and predestination and foreordination as opposed to free will. And actually, no, that's not what I'm going to talk about. Some of those things related to Calvinism will relate to some of the things that I say in the coming few lessons. But free will is not exclusively a theological concern or debate or argument or consideration. And I didn't really realize before I began to talk, to think about these things and to research these things, how big, how large a debate free will has been in other disciplines, in other areas, mostly secular philosophy, human behavior, cognitive science, psychiatry, all kinds of other realms of human interactions relate to your position or disposition on free will or determinism, as it's usually put. So this morning, my main goal is, and we're not going to be looking really at Scripture this morning, which is unusual, of course, for me to present, or any one of us really, to present a lesson that doesn't have Scripture in it. But that's coming, you know, that will be coming in the next lesson. But really this morning, I actually want to talk about this as it relates to a secular view of it. And I hope that the lesson will be helpful and applicable and not just sort of academic, because I think it is affecting a lot of the thinking in the world. So in order to kind of set you off of what your perhaps your remembered thinking is in this area, I want to first sort of make the case that you don't have free will, because you're going to expect me to make the case that you do. So I'm going to first tell you that you don't. Now, there are plenty of people out here, as we're going to discuss, that do not believe that you have free will. I do, and you can rest assured that that's the conclusion that I'm going to make ultimately. However, you don't have free will in a lot of areas. And let me just give you if I was to ask you to raise your hands, and you don't have to do this because you're not going to anyway, even if I ask for it. And here's a few questions just to sort of get our minds thinking about this. Did you, how many of you chose to be born? You chose freely to be born. Now, if anybody was raising your hand, you wouldn't be raising your hand now, because none of us chose to be born. Another question would be, how many of you chose your parents? Now, there might be some that would like some parents other than the ones you have. But you didn't choose that, did you? You didn't have any free will as it relates to your birth and your parents. How many of you chose the place you were born? Nobody chose the place that they were born. You had no control over that whatsoever. You had no control over the time you were born, in what country you were born, on what year you were born, what month, what day, what various other circumstances might have been present at the time. You have no free will considering your age, your height, various inherited traits that you have, the color of your eyes, color of your skin, color of your hair. None of those things you have any free will in those areas, and lots more. I've probably mentioned before that people that study the science of our bodies and the interior of our bodies tell us that at least 95% of what your body does all the time from birth to death, 95% of it is on autopilot. It's automatic. You have nothing to do with it. All those 70 to 100 trillion cells in your body, that some of them are making red blood cells right now, others are carrying blood, you know, they're all doing different things, and you have nothing to do with it. Almost nothing to do with it. Now, you may have eaten something this morning, and that contributed to these things happening, but you have nothing to do with it. All right. So that's, I made the case, I think it's fairly obvious that we do not have free will in every way, do we? So free will has to do with something other than the things that are out of our control. For example, we could go on about this for the rest of the day, but it's about to get pretty cold, you know, in Asheville, North Carolina, in the coming weeks and months, and there's nothing that we can do about it. Can you change that? No, I can't change that. Nobody on earth can change that. It just is, it's a part of the physical makeup of this world, and there's nothing we can do about it. And there's lots of other things that there is nothing we can do about. So there are physical restraints that limit our freedom in lots of ways and our choices. and are bound and limited by the laws of physics and by numerous other things, that, some of them which I've mentioned recently. For example, your parents often, at least while you're in the home as children, they limit your choices as to what you can do. You can't just go around taking a baseball bat and bashing in the walls and the windows, can you? No, because your parents are there to provide consequences for that kind of behavior, and it wouldn't be a pretty sight, would it? So your conscience is a part of what restrains your behavior. Police, government, laws, consequences of disobeying those laws. For example, I could go out here on our way home and I could get on the ramp that is going west, or get on the off ramp is what I'm saying, and get on the left side of I-40 heading back towards Candler. And how long would I last with the 18 wheelers and the rest of the traffic coming this direction and I'm going that way? I wouldn't last very long, and I think Gina would be one of those restraints to my doing that. It would not be a pretty sight. So those are other things that restrain our free will. So all of these things and more show that we don't have free will in every way, and that's the point that I'm making here. Now, at this point, I want to give you a little bit of a summary of some of the research that I have done as it relates to a secular world and their position on free will or determinism. And I've mentioned some of those, you know, science, Darwinism, philosophy, human behavior, psychology, cognitive science, and such like. First of all, this is a bigger question than you may have thought about as it relates to the world and how the world thinks in many ways and in many areas. And that's some of what I would like to kind of talk about this morning. Because the answer to this question has far-reaching implications as in a whole lot of areas, of which some I will talk about, that may not be immediately apparent to us. These disciplines that I have just mentioned place the question in terms of free will or determinism, not necessarily the Calvinistic ideas, which is kind of a biblical word. Predestination is a biblical word, which Calvinists take to mean something that that we don't accept and the Bible doesn't teach. But as far as the secular world of free will and determinism are the two opposing views of this. And the words themselves are fairly self-explanatory, but I'll give you kind of some concise definitions of those. So free will means that individuals make up their own choices through life with a sense of self-determination, such that we human beings are completely responsible and accountable for ourselves and our own actions and our own decisions, our own choices. That's free will. On the other hand, determinism is opposite of that, and that is that a person, any individual, you, I, anybody in the world, that a person is led by physical mechanisms within their own brain, and that the controls of human life are imposed by the constructs of parenting, conscience, police, laws, consequences of noncompliance, and all those other things that we mentioned. So we are like, in the deterministic view, we are like moist robots. that we actually, from birth to death, we are running a software program that is the result of a long chain of prior events of which we have no control. That's the determinism side of the argument. Now, having those definitions before us, just if you were thinking about this yourself, which one of those two views do you think, and don't answer out loud, but we'll talk about this, but which one of those two views do you think are the positions of the cognitive scientist, philosophers, psychiatrist, Darwinist, atheist, agnostics, all kinds of other people? Which one of those do you think that they would side with? Well, if you're thinking determinism, you would be right. Most of them, probably the vast majority of them, fall down on the side of determinism, not free will. Now, that is a big thing to consider, because if there's a whole lot of people out here, a large population of human beings that do not believe that human beings are accountable and responsible, culpable for their own behavior and their own actions, this, the implications of this are far-reaching. They're huge. We'll talk about that. I think I'm going to tell you why I think that this is the case. From all the research that I've done, I believe this is the case. And now I want to tell you a little bit why I think that this is the case. It's because that the majority of the people that are in these disciplines of academia and oftentimes are materialist. Or at least the curriculums that they're being taught in the universities after these disciplines are materialism or strict naturalism. And that the universe is nothing more than the material that it is made of, including us human beings. And we hear this, I've heard this for a long time. There used to be, many of you who are older here will remember the series known as Cosmos on public television, PBS. And Carl Sagan introduced that program, and it was a long-running series. But he introduced that program every time by saying, the cosmos is all there is, all there was, and all there ever will be. Does anybody remember that? Does anybody remember that series? I do. And from Carl Sagan, certainly before then, a fellow by the name is kind of a spokesman for science these days is Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he says fairly regularly that we are all stardust. He makes that statement. We are literally stardust. And the position that he is taking when he says that, just like Carl Sagan, they are looking at the entire universe as only matter. It's only material. There's nothing else here. Certainly no God, no spirits. Nothing that you cannot see. If you cannot see it, experiment with it, test it, it does not exist. So, if we are the product of random, undirected chance chemical combinations, in my case, I would be like a 220-pound sack of proteins. Okay, that's what I am, according to this view, really. So if that's true, free will doesn't make any sense at all. You can't have free will when you're just a sack of proteins. So there are only contrived reasons that we might choose left or right, up or down, this way or that. Various decisions that we make in our lives are contrived constructs of a society and civilization that we live in. But a universe made of random processes can't then produce beings that are not equal to those random processes, or because they're just purposeless materials to begin with. So we have a biological determinism. It's a biological determinism because it has to be that way, according to their view, because in order to say otherwise invokes something higher than or other than the material universe. And you can't do that. You cannot do that. You cannot invoke something higher than the material universe if the universe is material. That's not allowed in the world of materialism. Now, at this point, I want to convey some implications of this thinking that may help us to explain or understand some of the things that you have seen happening in our world over the past number of decades. I've seen it. You have seen it. And you may not have known when you saw it. You may not have known how it's hard to put your finger on what is going on here. It's hard to put your finger on, but you know there's something going on underneath the structures of the world that is changing radically people's thinking about who they are and about what the relationship we have to the universe and all kinds of things related to that. So here's a few applications of this deterministic ideology. If it is true that human beings are ultimately controlled by external motivations without regard to any sense of absolute laws or being subject to God or his authority or anything like that, then they are ultimately not responsible for or culpable, accountable for their choices. And I'm going to give you, first of all, a real life experience of my own to illustrate this, that actually some years ago started me down this road of thinking about these things. Some years ago, I was called to jury duty, and I was placed in a courtroom with a number of other potential candidates for this 12 people that were going to be selected by these two lawyers that were there. So I was seated in these 12 seats, and there were other people waiting, you know, in line to get in these seats. And the lawyers would ask us, this was here in Asheville, downtown, the lawyers would ask us, I was like the sixth person in line. So I got to hear what the questions were five times before they got to me. So I could pretty much make up my mind what I was going to say, you know, because I'd heard the other people answer the questions up to when it got to me. Well, one of the questions was this, and I remember it fairly well because after hearing it five times and hearing what the other jury candidates said to it, I was thinking to myself, what am I going to say to that question when it gets to me? And I sort of kind of pre-thought what my position on this was. And this was the question. It was this. Would you, now incidentally, this was a murder case. So this isn't something minor here. This was a murder case, and what turned out to be the murderer, I found out later, was convicted of murder, But this person had stabbed his girlfriend 50 times. This is the person that was sitting in the room there with me and with all the rest of us, with his lawyer. Now, here was the question. And I knew that, by the way, because they told us that. They told us that was what that was what the case against him was. So here was the question: Would you listen with an open mind to an expert witness that would give her testimony concerning the mental accountability and prior causes that led my client to potentially some criminal behavior? That was the question, essentially, if I remember it correctly. Well, what would you say to that? Well, here's what I said. I'd already rehearsed it in my mind what I was going to say, and what I said was, no, I will not be persuaded by such expert testimony, because I'm really not that concerned about why he did it or what prior causes were that led him to this. I am more concerned about if he did it. Isn't that what the jury is supposed to find out, is if he did it, not what the prior causes were that led him to this. So what do you think happened to Les after I said that? That's right. I was out of there. I said, Mr. Wicker, you may leave the courtroom. Incidentally, I was the first one who said that. The other five said, yes, I would listen with an open mind to this expert witness. Well, you know, I was out of there. And that was fine with me, by the way. I didn't want to spend the next 3 weeks listening to this stuff. But that individual I saw on the news later on was convicted of murder. But this idea that accountable adults are not ultimately responsible for their actions has been brewing in America for a long time, and the world, and it has influenced our justice system, among other things, all the way to the Supreme Court. The thinking goes something like this, if I just put it in a simple way. If you are a murderer, you were unlucky enough to get by biologic determination, you were unlucky and unfortunate enough to get the mind of a murderer. That's really what this boils down to. And no doubt many of you have recognized that there is a resistance to capital punishment in our land over the last many decades. There is a great resistance to capital punishment. There is a great resistance, in fact, in our prison system to punishment, the idea of punishment. It's more like rehabilitation, because there's no actual evil in the world. There's no one who is evil in the world. There's only behaviors that are harmful. There's only conduct that is not civilized or useful to us. And we have to take these people out of the society so that they can't harm other people. But there's not actually any evil going on. There's only causes and reasons for people to do what they do. Here's another case in point. What is the explanation that we hear rather commonly for all kinds of deviancy in sexual behavior, homosexuality, and a long list of other, perversions in human sexual behavior? Well, the thing that you hear most often is, I was born this way. I was born this way. I am biologically predetermined to be this way, and I can't change. And you shouldn't ask me to. You should accept me the way I am. because it's just chemistry. And chemistry, there's no moral objection to chemistry. If I'm biologically predetermined to be homosexual, then you cannot judge me for being that because I'm predetermined to be that by my own biology. That's the argument. Don't blame me. I was born this way. So what lies beyond these arguments is determinism. That's what I'm getting at here today. And for much of the world today, everything that happens is a construct of human invention. In other words, they wouldn't perhaps say it exactly like this, but evil is a kind of nutritional deficiency that can be resolved by taking the right pills. Of course, true evil cannot be acknowledged because that would imply something outside of the material universe. You cannot have evil in a material universe. Where does evil come from? Well, you know, it has to come from somewhere other than matter, you know, solids and liquids and gases. But if you believe that solids and liquids and gases are the only things that exist, then where does evil come from? Well, nothing is evil. It can't be evil. By the way, some of you here are old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan called Russia an evil empire. Do you remember the pushback that Ronald Reagan got for calling Russia an evil empire? I do. Do you remember when George Bush called Saddam Hussein evil? Do you remember the pushback that he got from the media because he said Saddam Hussein was evil? He can't say that. Why? Why can't he say that? See, the reason they don't like these terms, it is because it does not fit their biological determinism that they are bound to internalize and hold because they do not believe in God. They don't want to believe in God. They do not want to believe that there is a higher authority and an ultimate judge of the universe. Here's another thing that I ran across repeatedly in my assessment and study of these things. There's an attitude that says this, basically. We scientists know that in reality there is no free will, but we must all live lives pretending that there is. I heard many, many people say this same thing. We must live lives pretending that we do have free will. Or further, we scientists know that there is no God, but the artificial construct of having made up an ultimate authority and final judge helps human beings to live together in relative peace. Because there is a reasonable self-imposed constraints on our animal nature. What we would ordinarily do is constrained by this idea, this false idea, but it's useful in practical terms to our civilization because it helps people to stay in line and to respect laws and to respect one another and to live in relative peace. I heard this repeatedly. So the concept of God is beneficial to civilization, even though we know it's not really true. But we accept the fact that it's useful for people to think that. I'm not making this up. This is what they think. I've heard it repeatedly. I've watched many panels of people sitting on places. If any of you have seen TED Talks and all these kinds of things that are being put out there, I hear it repeatedly. It is what they think. There is no God, but it's useful for people to think that there is one because that holds an ultimate judge and an ultimate authority and an ultimate lawgiver, even though we scientists know there really isn't one. But all these little peons out here that think there is, that helps them. That helps them to kind of stay in line and be easily controlled by those of us who are the controllers of this world. Well, I need to finish here. Richard Dawkins says, we dance to our own DNA. Have you heard that phrase? That's in one of his well-known books. We dance to our own DNA. Sam Harris, by the way, who was another one of these well-known atheist spokesmen today. Has anybody heard of Sam Harris? Well, he wrote a book called Free Will. And Sam Harris has written this book, and he freely chose to write a book about why humans don't have free will. Does that make any sense to you? It seems rather contradictory to me that he chose to write a book on free will in which he argues that we have no free will. Well, a lot more can be said, and a lot more is going to be said if I continue to live and breathe and have sustenance about these things. But I need to close here for today. I'm going to say that we do have free will, just to kind of round off this segment of our series. We do have free will. And the implications of that are far-reaching, but in a different way than what I've been describing. The implications of that is we do have free will. You know why we have free will? I'll go ahead and cut to the chase, and I'm going to elaborate on this more. But we have free will because God has free will, and he's given it to us. God's got plenty of creatures out there that don't. All these creatures out here in the woods, insects on my box elder bugs are collecting on the front of my studio in this time because they like to get warm there. They don't have any free will. They're like little clones. They all look identical. I've studied them, by the way. So you cannot tell one from another. They're all identical to one another. They don't have free will. We do, because God has free will, and God has given free will to us because we are made in the image, the likeness of God. That's why we have it. No other reason. God gave it to us. So, the best of that quality is that you can freely choose to love God and to follow God and to be pleasing to God and to live life in this life with complete confidence of what the truth is about this and have a relationship that goes from this point through eternity, where we're going to be with that God who gave us free will to choose him. That's our sermon this morning. If I can help you in any way to draw closer to the Lord, all you have to do is choose to do that, and we'll help you. So at this time, we will stand and sing the chosen song.